Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good to see you. What have you been up to?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Back to school stuff.
Back to school. Oh, how was Colton's first day?
It was amazing.
It was.
It's grade school.
Nothing short of amazing.
It's grade school. Did you get your board hooked up?
I did. You know, you can see.
We didn't hear a cockadoodle do.
Let's see. Did I? I don't think I did. No. Awesome. Nope. Wait.
The witch is dead.
Allow me to break.
Ugh, gross.
Wait. Hold on.
Close. Gross.
Did you hear it?
You're ruining everything. What are you playing?
I'm trying to get Arnold.
Why?
You know what? It won't work.
Good. Right.
We're just going to go back.
Good.
We're going to go back to the OG, Eddie. We're going to go back to the OG. So tell me how Colton's first day was.
I don't know. It was good.
You told me he wanted to tell you all about it. What did he tell you?
He didn't tell me anything.
Nothing?
He said he liked it. I don't know. It's grade school.
So he's in what, second grade?
Second grade.
Second grade. I still remember second grade. You know what I did in second grade?
No.
I don't know why I did this, but I told my second grade class that my dad could bring a human skeleton to class.
Why? What? Because he was a doctor?
Yeah, but you know what? The funny thing
like
is...
Like an actual human skeleton?
Yeah, like a human
skeleton. Or just the fake one the doctors
have? No, like offices. Well, like a fake one, but I mean, those are, you know, the ones that they have, some are like real. They're real bones.
Okay.
So
did your dad have one?
No. That's the funny thing. Like, I just was like, I volunteered him without even thinking if he could find one. And the poor guy went all over looking for a human skeleton, and he came through. Oh, and I felt like the hero of the second grade. Ugh. It was a good day, Eddie, but I didn't realize how stressed my father was.
You've been in a foster home so fast.
Yeah, pretty much. So, I, you know, your dad may, your dad, your son may nominate you for, I don't know.
I had my dad, I think in second grade, because he was a police officer. He came in dressed in like full police gear with his gun.
That's awesome.
So badass.
You were like,
so
my
badass.
Dad is the boss.
He had a gun. He was wearing a gun in school. Awesome.
And you were just like, that's right.
Yeah.
He's my dad. I didn't know your dad was a cop.
Mm-hmm.
So how was that growing up?
He was a Capitol police officer.
So what does that mean?
In D.C., the actual the United States Capitol building has their own police force.
Oh,
the
so
building
that's
itself.
High up.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's just that building has its
own
police
force. Was
he strict?
Was he strict as a parent?
No, not really.
He didn't lay down the law?
No.
He was pretty lax? He let you get away with murder? Did that make you not get into trouble, you think, because you had to basically do right by, you know, his standards?
No.
Okay.
He was just that was his job, and he went and did it and came home.
And he wasn't like Eddie.
No, he wasn't like a militant
getting
dad.
Getting too old for this shit. He didn't have any like cool cop.
No,
lines.
No cool cop stories.
Oh, that sucks.
No, nothing.
Maybe we should get
him
on the
Capitol.
Show.
It's the U.S. Capitol. Nothing happens there.
Well, you don't know. You don't know.
I do know because my dad was a Capitol police there.
Secret.
There's
top
nothing
secret.
Happening there.
Did you do anything over the weekend? I had a crazy weekend, so I can't wait to tell
you.
What'd
you do? Tell me.
I saw two of my favorite artists. I saw Coldplay at the Rose Bowl on Saturday.
Okay.
Pretty crazy. And it was like 100,000 people, and they actually gave out little wristbands that all light up that are all in tune with the music. So at different parts of the show, there were, you know, hundreds of thousands of people just lit up like stars.
Did you have to turn the wristbands back in?
Yeah, you have to recycle. Well, you don't have to. You could, but it said, like, if you can, recycle them.
Hmm.
So you're like,
Did they light up without the music?
They were just always lit. Or they would just, like, start blinking. But it was crazy because you'd look around and you'd see all of the lights either changing colors or in sync with the music. I mean, it's just crazy. It was pretty spectacular. And Coldplay, you know, not many people know this, but they trademarked that. So if anybody ever wanted to use it, they'd get
light money. Up wristbands?
Yeah. They trademarked that concept at a concert event. It looks like a
plastic
watch.
What if you did it with
watch.
Headbands?
I mean, I think the technology is what they patented. So, yeah, they'd still get money for it. Doesn't matter if it's a necklace, a headband, or...
Yeah, I don't know.
And then I saw Adele on Sunday, which was crazy.
Was that Staples Center?
That was the Staples Center. Man, you know what's crazy? She still got 8 nights at the Staples Center. And you know what's even crazier? So
her music is super depressing.
Well, yes, of course.
And everyone loves her.
But I played Bonnaroo in 2009.
She makes you want to really kill yourself every time you listen to her music?
She makes you want to slip.
But yet everyone keeps listening to it?
Well, the funny thing is, a friend of mine, when I played Bonnaroo in 2009, she played and nobody knew who she was.
Yeah.
This is when she's like fresh on the scene. And a friend of mine was like, yo, you got to check out this artist, Adele. She's amazing. She's going to break. But, you know, he didn't say like, he didn't think she was going to break as huge as she did. And I went and saw her at Bonnaroo. Like, I only saw, like, 4 songs. Like, I only saw, like, the last little bit of her set.
Yeah.
And it was cool. And she didn't have a crazy crowd or anything. And it was, like, really good. Then I saw her open for John Mayer's solo acoustic, just an acoustic guitar player and her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, really good. She sang the song Chasing Pavements. And I was, like, good tune. Good tune. Mm-hmm. And then she came out with 21. And I was teaching. One of my students was, like, dude, this record is the best record I've ever heard in years. And I was, like, really... Really, though? Really? And then I listened to it, and that record is pretty phenomenal. I mean, the production, the songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's depressing, but it's really real. And you know what I respect about her is she writes her own tunes.
Yeah. No, I respect her as an artist. She's like, great. As talent and writing your own music and not, like, the way music is so overproduced nowadays.
Yes. And you know what's crazy?
But I can't listen to a song all the way through because want to jump out a window.
It's just, it is like saddening music.
It's
horribly,
it's the saddest music.
The crazy thing is she sold 20 million records of her last 2 records.
Yeah.
And nobody's doing that.
No one sells that many.
No one. And the crazy thing is I saw her play like theaters before, so I'd never seen her play like an arena. And man, it was just as spectacular as I could ever imagine.
Did she put on she doesn't do a show. It's not like a show.
No,
it's not like
but
seeing
that's what's,
like
YouTube. That's what's remarkable. You know what's cool that she did? So you know like those roadie boxes?
Mm-hmm.
She was in a roadie box, and nobody knew it. And they carted her into the middle of the stage. So there was a stage in the middle of the auditorium, or the stadium.
Staples Center.
And then there was a stage where the band was.
Right.
So she came out in the middle of the stage. And where my seats were like right there. It was so perfect. I didn't know that was going to happen. But it was really cool that she came out the way she did. And she totally like pulled a fast one on the entire audience. Because she was just sitting in this thin little box. And then she came out. And the crazy thing is...
How long was the concert?
It was 2.5 hours. And she brought a dog on the stage. She brought all kinds of people on the stage. Somebody made Mickey Mouse ears for her. So she was like so real. Like she was like wearing Mickey Mouse ears and performing. It's like... No costume changes, no fireworks.
She's singing those songs in Mickey Mouse ears?
Yeah. It was crazy.
That's a lot of mixed signals.
You know what? That's what was cool about it. It was like there was no fluff, and she just sang her ass off from beginning to end.
No, she's super talented. I just can't listen to her songs.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I like listening to her songs. I have to be in a
song. And if I did, it'd have to be one song, and then I'd have to move on to something else.
Ray LaMontagne's kind of like that,
too. 2.5 hours.
I love Ray LaMontagne, but I have to be in a mood to listen to Ray LaMontagne all the time. You know what I mean? But... it was pretty spectacular to see, the 2 top music acts, I think, of our time right now. I mean, I know Pearl Jam is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really, they're not, like, at the same level right now as Coldplay. Like, Coldplay's, like, on top of the world. They really are. They are top of the game as far as production, as far as the studios they're playing. I mean, to play the Rose Bowl, not many bands can do that. And they played them 2 nights, back-to-back. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty spectacular. So it was a fun weekend.
Good stuff.
When is Pearl Jam touring again?
They're doing an East Coast tour.
Are they coming back to the West Coast?
They do like, it's like, they mix it up. It's like every 4 years they come to the West Coast.
I love when they come, though. They're just an awesome, awesome
experience. They are amazeballs.
They're one of my favorite bands live, you know, so.
Yeah.
That's what I love about summer concerts. You're like, yeah, I like summer concert. Concerts.
When are you going to Wisconsin? Isn't that
Wisconsin
Summerfest, or was that already happened?
That already happened.
Oh, that already happened.
I sang at the Dodger game.
I've been out of it.
I didn't tell you about that, did I?
You showed me the picture because you stepped on the LA thing and you weren't supposed to step on the LA part.
One of my good friends, he actually deleted some footage of us singing at the National Anthem from the pictures, man. That was no fun. But
how did he delete it?
He thought he uploaded it to Dropbox, and then he just deleted it because it was too much footage on the phone.
God.
And I was like, damn it! So I was a little pissed about that. But I did get the Dodger footage.
It's the same group you did the Lakers game with?
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to do the Clippers. You got to do a Rams game.
I'm going to do a Rams game. I'm going to do a Kings game, and I'm going to do a Clippers game, and maybe go back and do a Galaxy game. Because I've done the Galaxy by myself. But I want to do all the LA teams, and then maybe do a couple San Diego teams, a couple Anaheim teams, and then I think I'll be good.
You good?
It's so fun because it's like, man, we were on the field. We were on the field. We got to watch, like, the first pitch. We were hanging out with the LA Sparks. We got great seats behind home plate. We got free hats.
You did a WNBA game?
No, I did the LA Dodger game.
But you hung out with the Sparks?
Well, because they were there doing some charity thing. Oh. Like, they were there for the Dodgers.
I don't know.
Why you gotta mess?
I'm not messing.
Don't mess, man. Like, quit messing, Eddie. I think our special guest has arrived. Mr. Alex Platt, how are you?
I'm doing very, very well.
Our studio audience loves you. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Oh, I think my effects are so low, Eddie.
It's not perfect. It's actually perfect.
It's a huge audience from very far away.
They're very far away.
Huge, but they're just like down the street. How you been, Alex?
I've been good, man. How are you doing?
So, Eddie, Alex and I've been good. I've been good. Alex and I have been sharing a studio rehearsal.
Yeah, I caught up with him a little bit before the show, like right before.
And he's been down the hall for months. I mean, years actually.
Years. Down the hall and now upstairs.
Yes.
Yeah, I moved.
You're upstairs now.
I'm upstairs.
Wait, are you in the big room upstairs?
What used to be the big room? It's still a big room.
Used to be my room.
No kidding.
It used to be my room.
No way.
And then it was Boom's room. You remember that?
It was Boom's room for a long time. He's gone now, but
I miss that room.
They actually re-outfitted everything, actually to my specifications.
That's awesome.
Built-in sound panels. I paid a little extra for that,
right?
But now I have it all outfitted. It's ready to go.
I need to see it.
You should come up, man.
So do you remember the band Capital Pusher by chance?
I do not. No.
So they had the big room in that building. And then we subletted it from them. And then they said, hey, we're getting rid of the room. Do you still want it? And I was like, yes. Tell them that we want it. Tell TK that we want the room.
That's right. Big shout out to TK Productions.
Yeah, big shout out to TK
we love you.
But they didn't tell them. So we lost our room. And I was so pissed.
Take back the shout out to TK.
Well, It wasn't his fault. It was Capital Pusher's fault.
Oh.
They totally dropped the ball, and we were just like hung out to dry. Luckily, we ended up getting into a room downstairs, and we've been there ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing but good things to say about TK.
Yeah, he runs a tight ship.
TK, if you want a rehearsal studio in Los Angeles, go to TK Productions.
TK Productions. There you go. A little shout out.
Yep.
But yeah, Alex, you've been down the hall, and now you're upstairs.
Now I'm upstairs for years. Little expansion. Got a nice two-room studio. Everything's outfitted. Been doing drum tracks up there for a while. Still got my teaching business, doing some producing.
That's right. Look at this.
Things are hopping, man.
And you know what? You went to Cal Arts, right, to study music?
I did indeed.
So tell us a little bit about that. So, like, let's go way back before Cal Arts, when Eddie was just a wee little lad.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about how Alex got into music when he was a kid.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
How did you get into music? Like, what was the thing that, like, triggered it? What was the thing that made you go, I want to do music?
My parents had me in music lessons from an early age, and they put me on piano probably a little bit too early, you know? And
like, two?
No, not that early.
Five?
Yeah, about five.
Okay.
And I stuck with the piano for a while, playing classical music until I was about 10. And then my brother also was in piano lessons, and he started picking up jazz. And at that point, I was done with the drums, or rather done with the piano. And my parents were like, well, we can keep you in music lessons, or you can quit, whatever you want to do. And I said, well, let's try the drums, because my uncle is a drummer.
That's awesome.
And the moment that I picked up a pair of sticks, I was like, okay, here we go.
Well, drums are so much cooler when you're a kid. Like, piano is like, okay.
Yeah, but drums you can just beat.
Drums
shit.
Are cool. They're just a cool instrument. Yeah, they're always the cool instrument.
They're also one of the more difficult instruments.
Totally.
But I think
the hardest, to be honest.
I didn't realize that until I started teaching the drums, that how hard it is to learn this instrument. But my brother,
because you're using every limb, appendage, whatever. You know,
it's like, there's so much that goes into it. But my brother had started playing jazz right around the time I started the drums, and he turned out to be a childhood prodigy. And I just practiced my, he's my younger brother. I just practiced my butt off to keep up with him so we could play together. And it went from there. I started, by the time I was 13, I was playing professionally.
That's crazy. Gigs. Really?
We grew up in a small town in Montana, so we were...
What city in Montana?
Bozeman, absolutely. Shout out to Bozeman. Yeah. Shout out to Bozeman, absolutely.
That's like, what, 2 or 3 hours from Helena?
It's about an hour and a half from Helena.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
About 2 hours.
And great musicians up there, great people. Can't say enough good things about my hometown. So we grew up playing out there, and by the time I moved out here when I was 18, I've been actually in about 2 weeks, it will be my 20th year in Los Angeles.
Nice. So, nicely done. Yeah. Absolutely. We like that.
Yeah, loving it.
You're loving
kill the audience. Just kill them. Just gas them.
You're just like, that's it. We're done.
And this really faint applause.
So I got to ask you real quick, like... In Montana, there can't be like a crazy music scene, is there?
Absolutely, you'd be surprised.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, jazz is really big in Bozeman and Missoula, and in Billings as well. There are some fantastic musicians, including the legendary Jack Walrath, who I have had the honor of playing with on a few occasions.
That's crazy.
He lives in Billings, and you know, I mean, he's legendary. And there are cats come through there all the time. They've got great jazz festivals that happen there. When my brother and I were growing up, we had the opportunity to open up shows for... I mean, we opened up a show for Ahmad Jamal.
Wow.
One time. We opened up a show for Diana Krall. You know,
Did he play Ponciniana?
Yes.
He better have.
Yes, he did.
No, but you know, some people don't play their hits.
In my memory, he did play that one, but he was playing very differently than in his minimalist days. He was much busier than you would expect him to be, because you know all the recordings that we know of Ahmad are like, you know, they're very sparse, and that's the beauty of his playing back then. Now he throws down some chops, you know.
Dude, that's
one of
the
nowadays,
most.
But I mean, like when I opened up for him, like, he was actually doing some much.
He's like a
stuff.
Legend of jazz.
Yeah,
Ahmad Jamal is one of the legends of jazz.
Yeah,
and he wrote this piece, Eddie. It's like such a pretty piece. And, like, he's using these chords that most people just never use in music. And he did these crazy cool things with melodies that were so simple. But he did like, melodies where, like, the melody was outlined with these really lush, beautiful chords. And the melody was, like, kind of in the middle of them. So it's just, like, it was just a beautiful comp. That Ponciniana, I think, is one of the greatest jazz compositions ever written.
It's actually one of my favorites with my brother when we play back Adam Platt. When we play back in Bozeman, we do, you know, two, maybe three times a year. He lives in New York, and we come back to Bozeman to do a show, and that's one of our favorite pieces to do. I mean, my job's pretty easy on that piece. I'm just going
And you come from a beautiful place like Montana. Eddie, you love Montana too. Like, Montana's like one of the most beautiful places in the country.
I agree. And everybody seems to be moving there. God damn it.
Well, it's just like...
There's always Wyoming. That's empty.
Wyoming's pretty empty. But, I mean, you've got Yellowstone and you've got Paradise Valley and some just really beautiful parts of that state.
Paradise Valley is one of my favorite drives on the planet. I cannot get enough of that area.
And Glacier Lake, too, is also there, right?
Yeah, Glacier Lake. Unfortunately, Paradise Valley got scorched by some wildfires a few years ago.
Oh, that's a bummer.
It happens. It's part of the cycle of life.
That's how you rebuild the forest. You got to burn it down.
Well, there's also this thing called like good wildlife management, and I think humans are still getting the hang of that one.
we'll never get the hang of that one.
Slowly but surely,
we'll be gone.
You mentioned Adele earlier, by the way. I was going to say the first time I heard Adele was on KCRW when Nick Harcourt was hosting the show. And it was right before she really broke, and he had her for an acoustic in studio show. And I was on my way to the studio that I had at the time, and I literally pulled over my car.
Wow.
Kicked back and just listened to that whole set, because just her and a guitarist.
She's a great singer. She's a great singer. Yeah,
she's amazing.
She really is.
Yeah. And you saw Dave Matthews Band this year too, right?
I'm going to see him next week, actually.
Aren't they playing right now?
They're playing right now, and they're touring. They're coming to San Diego on Friday and Saturday.
So we were both at that show last year.
That's right.
I didn't know that Herbie Hancock was on.
Dude, that was crazy.
My friend who wasn't in the know, who got me the tickets, she was sitting there. She's like, wow, someone really important just got up on stage.
And you're like, that's probably the greatest jazz legend right. of our time.
I lost it. I was like, no way.
Dude, he's bad.
Oh, man.
When I got out of music school, I did a concert with him, man. I did a concert with him Torres and Wayne Shorter. And, like, I'm still chasing that sound. Like, there was, like, a 20-piece band. I did it with Will Artipe and a whole bunch of other people. And it was like, one of the craziest concerts I've ever done. It was a tribute concert for Carlos Santana. So we did all these jazz and funky versions of Santana tunes with those guys. It was just like, this is crazy. This is just nuts.
Have you heard about this new super group that Carlos Santana formed?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so
he's got his old members, too, right?
No. It's Carlos Santana, his wife, Cindy Blackman.
Right. He's one of the best drummers.
Right.
Who used to be Lenny Kravitz's drummer.
Right. Herbie Hancock.
What?
Wayne Shorter.
What?
And Marcus Miller.
Holy shit.
Yes.
Whew, I got chills, man.
This is happening. This is all over.
They've made a record?
This is all over the internet. I forget what they're calling it. I forget what they're calling it at the moment, but I almost lost it when I said that.
That's going to be a hell of a band. Yeah, man. Mm. All right, so you're in Montana, and you decide to apply to CalArts.
Yep, I applied to CalArts. I got in.
So you knew you wanted to pursue music, probably when you started gigging. You're like, this is it.
Once I started gigging, I was pretty sure.
This is the business.
I was pretty sure. I had a choice between creative writing and music, and I eventually went to music.
If you were a paid musician when you were younger, like you were making, were you making a living as a musician?
Well,
before you went into CalArts?
Well, a living would have to be in quotes because I was still living with my parents.
Right. Well, I wonder like why a musician, if they're like sort of working and they can go that way, what makes you go? What drives you to go to school instead of just pursue doing gigs?
That's a very good question. Like, well, for one thing, I was in a very small town.
Okay.
And the teacher that I had there, I had a couple of really great teachers. Michael Blessing, Jeff Vick, Jeff Vick is a concert percussionist. And I got to a point with Jeff where he was like, I think I'm taking you as far as I can on the drum set. And there was really not a lot of other people in town who were teaching at the time. And a guy moved to town who was hired as our local a conductor of our local orchestra, a gentleman named Matthew Savory. And but he had graduated with his undergraduate degree from the New England Conservatory. So he had studied with Bob Moses and Fred Buda and all these guys.
Wow.
Right? So he took me on as one of his only students and proceeded to kick my ass. And
you're not allowed to swear, Alex. I'm just kidding.
Shut up. So I think it was during that time that I was getting my ass kicked, and I realized that, you know, if I wanted to get really better at what I was doing, at the time I realized I was probably going to have to leave Bozeman because my teacher's focus was conducting. He was not, you know, I was one of his only students, and he was not into just continuing to teach me. And I wasn't really into continuing to staying, you know. And I also know that, you know, because it's a small town, really, if you want to get better, you have to surround yourself with players who are much better than you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly
And instructors, too. Instructors, that's another important part.
So I got into CalArts. I got accepted to New England Conservatory as well, but I liked CalArts better. I liked the vibe. I liked the whole thing. And I studied there with Joe LaBarber.
And it's not cold in the wintertime.
Yep. That's true.
Possibly a factor. But that was exactly what I encountered when I got to CalArts, with players who were much, much better than me. I went to school with Tony Austin, for crying out loud.
Did you go to school with Zane?
I went to school with Zane.
Wow.
Yeah. Zane and I were in multiple ensembles together. And
what was he like as a college student? I've only known professional Zane Musa in NK Band experience.
Man, I have so many Zane stories I can't even begin. Rest his soul. I miss him
so
much.
Yeah, I miss him too, a lot.
I
still think about him every day, man. It's so crazy.
Probably one of the saddest moments in the last, you know, couple years of my life.
Me too.
I cried like a baby.
Me too. Dude, I did a radio show as a tribute to him, and I cried so much, man. It was just like, this is... I still miss him, man. It's like crazy. Some people leave, and it's like, you remember them, but some people... You still feel the loss, like, every day. Like, you really feel like you've been robbed of something great. You know what I mean?
Really, to truly... But at the same time, you know, Zane left behind something, a spirit of not just the music, but of how he handled himself as a professional.
Yeah.
And I could tell all the crazy stories from college, but really, you know, what I remember him by is the fact that I would do a show out here, just like some... I'd be playing at some bar and grill with some trio, right? And I would be playing wherever, and I would let him know I was playing, you know? And he would just show up with his horn.
Yeah.
And I'd buy him a drink, and he would hang out for an entire set of music and play, and then tip his hat and say, see you later.
And then he'd go to another jam session and do the same thing.
Right.
Like all these people have told me this. Like, I've gone to a couple of his jams, but... It's crazy. He would do these, like, all night, like, adventures just playing music. And it's like, I'm the opposite. Like, I just do the gig, and I want to go home, and that's it.
I'm the same way, and I tend to be a hermit. I don't go out. Right. I don't go out nearly enough. I don't go out as much as I should. And Zane, to this day, is still a shining example of go out and give your music to the world. And
right.
Be as giving and as generous as you can. And man, was he a generous...
So were you in ensembles with, like, Zane and other players?
Yes. The ensembles I played in with him were led by the faculty guitarist Larry Kuntz, who is absolutely fabulous. If you've never checked out Larry Kuntz, go check out Larry
Kuntz. He's another legend in jazz.
And Larry's a great teacher as well. Larry is... will give you the gentlest ass kicking of your entire life, and he's a wonderful.
Eddie got a little turned on when he said
generous.
Just kidding. but I played in ensembles with him, mostly in Larry's ensemble, and we had a great time. And so, if you want to hear stories from back in the day, Zane was so hyperactive that he would, in the middle of a song, he would walk outside of the... He would just walk out, you know, maybe for a smoke or whatever. Or he would, in the middle of a rehearsal, he would start doing push-ups.
What?
Because he couldn't sit still. And at one point, Larry actually told him, he was like, you need to leave until you can settle down.
That's awesome.
You know, because he just had too much...
energy.
He just had too much vibrant musical energy for him to wait, you know, and... That was one of many amazingly funny Zane stories out there. But
so you knew you wanted to be a jazz drummer, or did it change once you got to school? Did you kind of get a breadth of other styles, Latin stuff, reggae, rock, or were you kind of well versed in a lot of those styles, and your focus was just to be a jazz musician?
Absolutely. I mean, I came in knowing a lot of songs, like just jazz repertoire, but from the moment I hit the ground, I spent probably the first 2 years of school there really learning how to play funk. Because
that's awesome.
Because that was all Tony Austin's fault. Because he
good teacher.
Tony, we were the same age, you know, and he was, you know, he at 18 he was at the top.
Yeah.
He was already at the top of the class, and he and I got to talking at one point. You know, we were talking about, you know, things, ways that I could improve my playing, because I was definitely, you know, at the bottom of the totem pole, and we were talking, and he was just like, you need to get turned on to this stuff.
He just gave you records?
No, he told me what to listen to, and from then on, for like the first 2 years, that is all I listened to. That's all I played along with, especially like Maceo Parker.
Yeah,
you know,
Life
on Planet Groove.
That album changed my life too, man. It's the album. First two, Shake Everything You Got.
Yeah,
right from the top. It's just like, this is the funkiest thing I've ever heard.
That
in my
first,
life.
That first song, and the whole album is great. You know, and it's the whole horn section, and Kenwood Dennard is just like destroying it on drums.
Yep,
you know, and. And Larry Goldings is on organ. I mean,
Fred Wesley, like, yeah. This is all James Brown's band members, pretty much. Not all of them, about half of them. and Maceo Parker's record, like, that's where I learned about funk. It was like, this is, like, the terminal to go through to, like, really understand this music on a deeper level.
And then I hung out a lot with... he was getting his master's degree at the time. I hung out a bit with Trevor Lawrence Jr.
Wow.
When I was in my first year or two there. And he helped me get my hip-hop chops into, together, because he had just recently... he had just written a book that... I don't know if he ever published the book, but he had just written one. And we exchanged some time together. I would actually go and set up his drums at shows. I was a terrible drum tech, and after a while, it didn't work out. It was terrible, just terrible. But he sat down with me many times and showed me what he was doing, and turned me on to like the Roots and that stuff. So yeah. I spent a lot of time branching out into that style, especially because, you know, that's the sort of thing that gets your pocket together.
Yeah.
It gets your time together. And I still do that with my students, even when, from the moment that they start on an actual drum set, and I'm teaching them the first basic beats. You know, the first thing I do is I have them, you know, put on a headset and play along with the Roots,
you know,
because that's,
you know, that's the title. Like, we've opened for the Roots, and NK Band's opened for the Roots. That's the only band that I think that when I saw them play, I was like, we need to practice like 10 times as much. Like, this is ridiculously tight. I mean, their whole set was like that. And it was just like nonstop, like boom, 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 like hit after hit. Like, just, it was ridiculous, man. It was just crazy. So that's good that you're influenced by them. That's that's a good thing.
I'm
Questlove.
Listening to Questlove, stuff really, like, that was a life changing
quintessential
for me. Yeah, quintessential.
Well, let's get to one of your tracks. What are you going to play us first?
I'd like to play this track that I'm doing with my newest trio, and the personnel on the trio. We have a great bass player named David Hilton. Who was out of San Diego, a Berklee graduate from Berklee College of Music, and he's one of the finest five-string electric players, in my opinion. He's and kind of an unknown, so I'm pumping him up because people got to know this guy's name. His name is David Hilton, and the guitarist on the track is a guitarist named Brad Rabuchin.
Hmm.
And Brad has played with a lot of guys. He toured with Ray Charles during the last year of Ray's life.
Wow.
And has played with David Fathead Newman and a bunch of other cats. Brad has been a beautiful blessing in my life. So we record all this stuff at my studio. I should preface before we start this that these are pre-release tracks. You heard it here first. These have
nice debut, Eddie.
These haven't even been mastered yet, so pump the volume a little bit.
Pump up the volume.
This first one's a tune called Cereborn.
All right.
Cereborn, here we go.
Thank you.
All right, yes, yes, indeed. Oh, our studio audience loves it.
And
there's the studio audience.
Yeah, they came after the music was playing, man.
They're less than a mile away at this point.
So you were saying that was a Pat Metheny tune.
Yeah, it's a Pat Metheny tune. Brad Rebuch, and I've heard it played before, but I'd never actually worked on that tune. And we spent.
Did he bring it in? He was like, "Yeah, let's do this tune, man."
Yeah, he suggested that one, and we spent a few takes getting it to the point where we felt like we had it right. And that's absolutely one of my favorite Pat Metheny tunes. Now.
Pat Metheny is like one of the greatest jazz composers and players. It's absolutely. Like there's either, like, it's kind of funny when you see musicians. It's like you can either compose or you can play, and when you see guys that can do both so ridiculously well, it's just like, man, that's crazy. You're a monster.
He's a legend. He's got to do something about that hair, though.
Eddie, you should grow a little Pat Metheny.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Well, you'll have to Google it afterwards.
No idea.
So you graduated from CalArts, and you wanted to stay in LA and tour, record. Tell us like what that transition was like for you.
Unbelievably difficult, and I entered a pretty dark phase. I was still living up in Newhall, Santa Clarita area, and like a lot of people, you know, you have to go get that day job.
Yeah,
and went through a couple of really horrible day jobs up there, and experienced a house fire in 2002.
Wow!
And that pretty much forced me to throw a lot of my stuff into storage. You know, I saved a lot of stuff.
Were you in the fire, or were you
lost a lot of stuff? We all lost.
Were you like outside and just lost like a bunch of stuff?
It's funny that we should bring this up because my friend here who is hanging out, one of my best friends, Juliet. She was
Say hello. Don't worry.
Hello.
She was living with me at the time, and. And she lost way more than I lost, but the house was saved, and there was, and we both went through a very
crazy,
traumatic, very difficult transition. And it started when we were we had been my brother and I and a bass player named Kelly Roberti, who was one of our early mentors, who had just passed on earlier this year from lung cancer, unfortunately. We had been working on an album, and Juliet and I were part of I guess we would call it like a documentary kind of thing that was going on around the band. I don't, you know, spare you the details on that one. Smoke and Lights Productions. That's what it was called, Smoke and Lights Productions. So we were working.
It's a good name. It's a good
name.
So, yeah. So we were working on this thing, and I was living in the guest house, you know. Up in the front house was where we were working on the production meeting, because our friend was part of the whole crew. And we walked back from the production meeting, and I noticed that it looked like my lights were out. And I opened up the door, and flames and smoke.
Wow.
And
crazy.
I don't remember this part, because apparently the adrenaline just kicked in, but apparently I walked calmly across the yard and grabbed a garden hose and, like an idiot, crawled in on my hands and knees and put the fire out.
I can attest to that. I saw that. I was like, what are you doing?
Wow.
And I called the fire department. He's putting it out by himself.
Yeah, and Dave...
You're like, I've dreamt of this day my whole life.
Our friend comes up and he's like, Alex, the fire department says don't go near the fire. And I said, F that, my drums are in there. So
that should be the name of your next album.
So that forced me to move back home, and then that's when I came out to the West Side. I was living on Venice Beach, and was working a couple of day jobs. And during the time that I was up in Newhall, though, that's when I met Swami Tirtha Sankirtananda.
Eddie, can you repeat that?
No, I don't even know what he said. I thought you were having a stroke.
And whose American name is Alice Coltrane. We all
right. Yes,
know,
yes.
You know who she is. I don't like to say.
Tell Eddie who she is, because Eddie's kind of a recluse.
I'm a music noob.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I'll tell you the story, though, because I was still living in Newhall, and a friend of mine said, you need to come to this ashram. There's a wonderful guru there that you need to meet. And I was in a very dark place. I was working horrible jobs. I wasn't playing music. I was miserable. And I came to this ashram, and she told me that it was Alice Coltrane who was the guru there. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. And when I met Swamini, Alice Coltrane, when I met Swamini, it was instant, the connection that was there. And she talked me through... She talked me through easily the darkest years of my life, and I probably wouldn't be
well,
around.
It centers you when you hear, like, the words that you kind of need to, like, get you back on track. You know what I mean?
Clarify the question?
No, I'm saying, like, it centers you when you hear something like that. You know
yes,
what I mean?
It's just, yes,
like,
yeah.
You almost need that guidance, like, from somebody to kind of snap you out of your...
Yeah, and...
The deep hole that you can get into in your mind.
Yeah, she sat down with me one-on-one and personally talked me through some stuff, and... What was wonderful about her personality is that, you know, on one hand, she was this enlightened soul, you know,
right.
You're sitting in the presence of a living saint. And on the other hand, she's also this little jazz musician who's been around the block many times. And so we would go back and forth between conversations about jazz. And
isn't she John Coltrane's wife or
she's
daughter?
John Coltrane's
that's
wife.
That's right. That's right. John Coltrane's wife.
Yeah. And she's also she was also one of the few jazz harpists out there. And a great jazz organist. She was a legend in her own right. In fact, the I forget the name of the last album that she did, but last album, Translinear Light was the name of the last album that she did, was with Charlie Hayden, Rest His Soul, and Jacques Dejanet, which is this unbelievable album. If you haven't had a chance to check that album out, it came out maybe a year or two before she passed into the next plane of existence.
Right.
She's a legend in her own right. But I personally feel like I have my current existence to thank because of her.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, so let's get to your next track real quick. Now, you've been recording jazz with a bunch of different musicians. Who are the people that are playing on this
track? It's actually the same trio.
Okay.
And we decided to do... Jimi Hendrix cover.
Love this song.
And we decided to do it as a ballad. The title of the track that everybody will know is Little Wing.
All right, here it is. So badass. It's ridiculous. Give an applause, Eddie. Come on. We need some Hendrix applause in the house. So, Alex, you produced...
And silence.
So, you've been doing a lot of producing. You've been producing this record. How did you get into that, and like, how has that changed the way you work?
Accidentally, I drew the short straw on a project years ago. That was the project that we were talking about previously with my friend here.
You can say hello again.
Hello. This is Juliet Clancher, by the way. I want to talk a little bit for a second about this person. This is one of the baddest lighting designers in the business.
Baddest of the best.
And that is not an exaggeration, all right? You want a lighting designer, you talk to Juliet Clancher. She's right here.
That's right.
Yeah. So I drew the short straw on the producing thing, and I ended up doing not a bad job, but producing is still a very new thing for me. I wouldn't call myself a producer.
Right.
I do projects for various clients, usually smaller singer-songwriter clients. I do it out of my own recording studio. And that's been a really terrific eye-opening experience, especially in terms of getting like my arranging chops together and
right.
everything, and you know, learning also how to guide musicians, especially musicians who have like really never been in the studio before.
Right.
So that's been fun. In terms of producing a jazz record, you know, I can't take credit for producing the stuff that we're listening to today.
It's a collaborative effort.
I did do the mix on these first two tracks that we've listened to, but in terms of like producing, because it's jazz, so we're all getting together and we're playing at the same time. We're not going track at a time,
right?
Where you layer stuff and do
it's all live, right? It's all live.
And you know, and so all three of us, we collaborate on the arrangement. We do several takes until everybody's kind of in agreement about stuff, and then we record it. The only thing I do is I'll do a mix, and if I'm not happy with the mix or they're not happy with the mix, then I'll send it to someone who will do a better job than I can.
Right.
You know, and then and there it is. So I wouldn't call myself necessarily the producer on those tracks.
Well, we'll give you producer credits.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Alex, you're a great player, you're a great producer, and you're also a great teacher. Where can people find you? What's your website? And all that good stuff, so our listeners can find you.
And thank you very much for that. The teaching website is westsidedrumlessons.com. You can't forget that, westsidedrumlessons.com. If you want to find me on Facebook, it's Westside Drum Lessons and Recording. Again, very easy to find. Or if you just want to find me, just look up Alex Platt. I make myself as visible as possible.
Spell it out, because people are dumb.
A-L-E-X. Hang on. Give me a minute. Oh, yeah. P-L-A-T-T. Did I win?
I think you did.
Two T's
and Platt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alex Platt, we got to have you back. Thank you for being such an awesome guest.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course.
It's a blessing, as always, to be around you, man. And
likewise.
I'm sure I'll see you back at the
ranch. I'll see you back at the rehearsal studio, man. But thank you. On behalf of Eddie and I, we'll see you guys next week. Alex Platt.
Very
and Juliet.
Good.
Thank you.
You can say hello one more time.
Or bye.
Aloha. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.